The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the January-February issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. And we're going to go to our Who's Who on page 8, third line today. Kyle Connor, Winnipeg Jets left wing. His height is 6'1". His weight is 183 pounds. He was born December 9th, 1996, hometown, Shelby Township, Michigan. With 15 goals and 18 assists in his first 29 games, Connor sparked Winnipeg's fast start. He was named an All-Star for the second time last year, when he had 34 goals. In his lone college season at Michigan, Connor led the nation in goals, 35, and was third in assists, 36. But did you know the original Jets moved to Phoenix and played as the Coyotes before continuing as the Utah Hockey Club? The current Jets relocated from Atlanta, where they were the Thrashers in 2011. Mason Miller, athletics pitcher. His height is 6'5". His weight is 200 pounds. He was born August 24, 1998, hometown, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. As a rookie in 2024, Miller made the All-Star team. He struck out 104 batters in 65 innings and had an ERA of 2.49. Miller, who was converted from a starter to reliever in 2023, also made history for throwing the last pitch in the Athletics' last game in Oakland. But did you know? The A's will play next season in Sacramento before ultimately moving to Las Vegas. In the past, the franchise has called Philadelphia and Kansas City home. And finally, we have Darius Garland, Cleveland Cavaliers guard. His height is 6'1". His weight is 192 pounds. He was born January 26, 2000, hometown, Nashville, Tennessee. Through the first 25 games of the 24-25 season, during which the Cavaliers went 21-4, Garland averaged 20.5 points per game and shot a career-best 48.8%. A first-round pick out of Vanderbilt in 2019, where he only played 5 games due to injury, Garland made his first All-Star appearance in 2022. But did you know? Garland's father, Winston, played in the NBA, and the pair are one of the few father and son combos to each have recorded a triple-double. Good job, guys. Next, we have warm-up, hot take. Follow the golden rule. Here has a pitcher, all rise. An extra plate appearance from Aaron Judge would certainly bring fans to their feet. And shows a picture here of Aaron Judge about to connect, maybe on one of his fabulous home runs. But the golden rule. Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred has floated a new golden at-bat rule. And the rules are in. My instinct is that it's not baseball, said Fox Sports reporter Ken Rosenthal. It's so ridiculous I can't even dignify it with an answer, scoffed talk radio legend Mike Francesca. That's the crazy idea, said Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred. Yes, Mom, Manfred is now considering a rule change he once dismissed as crazy idea on the Dan Lebatard show with Stugatz. For Manfred's many critics, disagreeing with himself represents the first time Manfred has ever been right about anything. Here's the idea in a nutshell. At any point in a baseball game, a team can send up their best hitter up to bat, no matter who is supposed to be at the plate. The version Manfred dismissed on the Lebatard show in 2015 was more extreme. Managers would get 4 or 5 golden at-bats per game in an effort to get their star players up to bat as many as 10 times. But the basic concept is the same. To watch Manfred then replied, "You're wasting my time." What changed? Perhaps the success of other recent rule changes? The pitch clock? Bigger bases? Convince the commission that baseball fans have a bigger-than-expected appetite for tinkering with America's oldest pro sport. For many fans, however, this idea is a bridge too far. The 1-9 batting order is the most fundamental aspect of the game. In fact, you'd be pretty hard-pressed to find someone in sports media enthusiastic about the idea. Until you open this magazine. That's right, Rob Manfred, 2024. I've got your back, brother. Don't let those naysayers like 2015 Rob Manfred get you down. Let's do this thing. Watch carefully as I line up the predictable arguments against the golden at-bat and knock them down like Shohei Ohtani knocking back-to-back home runs in the ninth inning while batting first and second. First up, it ruins records. Great hitters getting 160 extra plate appearances per season will warp numbers. Newsflash, gang, the records already make no sense. Those guys who set all those hitting marks in the 1990s and thousands were on so many steroids they looked like someone had inflated them with a bike pump. Cy Young wrote the pitching record books with an arsenal that would get him shelled at this year's Little League World Series. I don't know if that's true. But the point is, you can't prove me wrong. Everyone complains these days about how the rigors of the modern game have made records unbreakable. No one even reaches 300 wins or 500 homers anymore, much less challenges the tippy-top of the leaderboard. With his golden at-bats, Aaron Judge gets to actually chase all those past Yankee greats. Here's a more compelling argument. The golden at-bat ruins the spontaneous underdog moment. In the NFL, the star quarterback has to be the hero with the game on the line. In baseball, the worst hitter on the team or a guy limping off the bench has the chance to be the man. In Game 6 of the 2011 World Series, David Freese of the Cardinals forced extra innings with a game-tying triple with two outs in the ninth inning. But he wouldn't have been in that position under the golden at-bat rule. Albert Pujols would have gone up to the plate. This point was also made by people resistant to the National League opting the designated hitter. Sometimes a pitcher got a big hit and it was fun. For every Bartolo Colon home run, however, there were hundreds of thousands of miserable at-bats of pitchers flailing against their opposite numbers. The David Freese example is selective memory. Most of the time, the number six hitter does not save the season. Someone like Freddie Freeman, page 40, does. And now for their final objection, the golden at-bat haters send up the sanctity of the record books. They're using their golden argument. But it's time to let the record books go. Nobody has hours of fun on a Sunday night studying the record books. The games are meant to be entertaining first. The record books are just that, recordings of this fun sport and the many ways it has changed. And we're going to complete February birthdays. February 5th, five-time Ballon d'Or winner and Portugal star Cristiano Ronaldo turned 40. February 6th, two-time major champion Colin Morikawa celebrates his 28th birthday. Quarterback Matthew Stafford of the Rams is 37 years old. And finally, February 23rd, gold medal winner discus thrower Valerie Allman turns 30. At the playground outside Perkins Elementary in San Diego, there's a mural. It featured an oversized kid sitting on a small planet Earth, staring off into space. On the mural are the words, Sueña Grande. And right above that is the English translation, Dream Big. Not far from the mural on a winter Monday afternoon, cones have been set up around a basketball court and balls have been distributed to a group of 12 or so kids. At the end of the court, a man named Coach Juan is putting some of the kids through drills. At the other end, the person running the clinic looks barely older than the elementary school children. In fact, one is taller than he is. The coach's name is Arden Bela. He's a sophomore at Francis Parker High. He made the clinic possible, and for that, he's our Sports Kid of the Year. an eye-opening experience. The first time Arden visited Perkins was about 4 years ago. He was volunteering to read to the students at the school. On the way out, he was chatting with the principal, Fernando Hernandez. As they were talking, Hernandez told Arden that the school recently had to let go of its athletic coach to save money. It was a blow to the school and the students who desperately needed such programs. Many Perkins students live in shelters, in cars, or even in tents near the school. Hernandez estimates that at that time, more than a third of the students were affected by homelessness, and most of those who weren't came from impoverished backgrounds. In this community, we do not have a YMCA, says Hernandez. We do not have a Little League. If parents wish to take their kids to play these things, they have to travel out of this community. And most of our families do not have a car. They're not mobile. When Hernandez explained the situation to Arden, the 11-year-old was stunned. He loved playing basketball. He was on a club team, and while he knew he was never going to grow up and become the next Steph Curry, he found joy in playing with his friends. So Arden talked to his parents, Sohat and Zenyep, about how he could help. They got in touch with Hernandez, and Arden offered to come to the school and teach the kids how to play basketball every Wednesday afternoon. Coaching kids who are roughly his age was not easy. My first year, I wouldn't call it a train wreck because it went well and the kids enjoyed it. But it was hard for me, Arden says. There were times where I was thinking, man, should I just stop doing this? Because I don't know if the kids are getting anything out of it. So Arden did what a lot of kids his age do. He spent time on YouTube. He wasn't watching silly videos, though. He was taking in tutorials on how to teach kids the game. He also drew on his experience as an actor. We should note that Arden is also an author who has published 3 books about a flying car, and he's also a documentary filmmaker. I had a really loud voice, and I used to do shouting and stuff like that, so that helped me a lot, Arden says. And I got a whistle as well. Whistles are important. Eventually, he began to see results. Basketball was giving the kids some badly needed structure. It teaches the kids more life lessons like working as a team, being hard working, and the need for sportsmanship, Arden says. At the same time, Arden realized that there were more schools like Perkins that lacked sports programs. He soon realized if he really wanted to broaden the program, he was going to need more resources. So, at the beginning of 2020, he started Sports for Kids. The charity raises money to purchase equipment and pay instructors like Coach Juan. But it does more than just fund the clinics and have introduced 750 kids to team sports, including soccer and basketball. Sports for Kids has distributed more than 25,000 pounds of food and mobilized 350 youth volunteers. Arden is the chief executive officer of Sports for Kids. In other words, the boss. He acts like it. He's the one who's going out and applying for grants and giving speeches to raise money. He has a real knack for it. The charity has raised more than $300,000. And it's not just money. It's also getting people to volunteer their time. Arden has brought in a former NBA player and member of the Harlem Globetrotters to help with clinics. He actually did rugby too, says Hernandez. He brought out players from the local team, and we're all alike. What's rugby? How do you play it? What are the rules? And San Diego has a rugby team. How he finds them, I don't know. And under the article, Getting to Know Arden, favorite meal. Chipotle burrito. Favorite TV show, The Office. New Year's resolution. Every time I make a mistake, I need to write a detailed plan to learn from it. Who should play you in a movie? Adam Sandler. One place you'd like to visit someday? Tokyo. Which superpower would you like to have? Telekinesis. Good job, Arden. Remembering their roots. So how did Arden get this way? His parents came to the United States from Turkey 27 years ago with few possessions, but they've been able to make a good living through hard work. That hasn't been lost on Arden and his older brother, Keenan. Arden's parents insisted that he and his brother not forget about their family's humble roots. That not only has the advantages they do, not everyone has the advantages they do. Arden started volunteering when he was around 5, doing things like serving food at homeless shelters. He always made sure to talk to the people he met there. Hearing their stories, I guess I kind of developed empathy, he says. You get a really good feeling when volunteering, and you feel like you're making an impact. You're having a contribution to society. I mean, I got addicted to that. As Arden is talking, he's sitting in the cafeteria at Perkins. Scattered around the room are boxes of books he procured from Barnes & Noble's for an upcoming holiday giveaway. When asked what he'd like to do in the immediate future, he says he wants to put on more clinics to use sports to teach kids about teamwork. In a few years, Arden will be off to college. He wants to make sure sports for kids is in good hands when he goes. He'd like to eventually become an entrepreneur, so long as his business can do good. He and some friends are already at it, developing an app that allows parents and struggling parents to track and incentivize their work, essentially setting up reward for each academic goals. Coach Juan, for one, doesn't doubt that Arden will achieve his goal. I see him being the owner CEO of some multi-billion-dollar company, says Juan. You better stay close to him, because if not, you're going to get left behind. Running the charity means Arden doesn't have time to play with his basketball club team anymore, but he still goes to the gym twice a week to play against grown-ups, and he still finds time to get out to school to do some hands-on work. On this day, he and Juan are running the show for some regulars who have been attending his clinics since they started. Arden gives out shooting tips and runs drills when he sees some kids goofing off. He makes them do a few jumping jacks. But when he sees some behavior he really doesn't like, saying mean things, he takes the kids aside and talks to them about it. This can be taught through school and classes as well. They help these kids tremendously, Arden says afterward. But there's a certain aspect of teamwork and sportsmanship that comes from sports and from athletics. Then it's time to go. So we get up, walk outside, taking one last look at the mural. That's a reminder that sometimes dreaming big can lead to great things. Keep it up, Arden. Look forward to seeing you in the future doing wonderful things. Next, we have Steady Freddy. This is probably talking about throughout the most trying season of his career, first baseman Freddie Freeman was able to stay focused and fight through pain to lead the Dodgers to a dramatic World Series victory. In the 121 years since the first World Series, no game in the Fall Classic had ever ended on a grand slam. And then Freddie Freeman came along. In the 10th inning of Game 1 in October, Freeman's Dodgers trailed the Yankees 3-2. Freeman was due to bat 6th in the inning, so he just rooted for his teammates to start a rally, never thinking the game would end up in his hands. But it did. Los Angeles loaded the bases with 2 outs, and Freeman promptly drove a fastball into the right field seats. The slam propelled Los Angeles to a win in the World Series, and Freeman was named the MVP, marking a happy end to what was easily the most difficult season the 15-year vet had ever had to endure. But it was a year that ultimately ended on a high, and not just because of the hardware Freeman racked up. For the 8th time in his career, he was chosen to play in the Midsummer Classic. He took his whole family with Chelsea and his 3 daughters, 3 sons, 8-year-old Charlie and 3-year-olds Brandon and Max, to the All-Star Game in Arlington, Texas. The family members all became sick with flu-like symptoms, but by the time they got back home, everyone seemed better. Then Max woke up with a limp. Within a couple of days, he wasn't eating or drinking. Freddie was in Houston with the Dodgers when he got a call from Chelsea that Max would have to go to the hospital. Freddie rushed to the airport and flew home. I was just bawling, crying, he says. Doctors ran test after test before they finally were able to correctly diagnose Max's illness. After more than a week in the hospital, he was finally cleared to go home. Freeman missed 8 games, which is one more than in the past 4 seasons combined. He was blown away by the support of his family received from the baseball community. One time, I'm sitting in the hospital, Freeman said, and the whole Brewers coaching staff sent off a video about how they're thinking about us. Angels outfielder Mike Trout, who was on the injured list, offered to help in any way. Let me do something, Trout told him. Can I at least bring you donuts? Mike, Freeman replied, laughing, do you think I'm putting donuts in my body right now? On August 5th, Freeman returned to the lineup. The fans at Dodger Stadium gave him a standing ovation. Honestly, the baseball community and family that we have is special, Freeman says. You don't know where you're going to need the support system, but it surely shows itself. Just as things were getting better with Max, Freeman developed health problems of his own. Lots of them. In mid-August, he broke his right middle finger fielding a ground ball. Over the next 6 games, he went 3-for-23. I don't even remember what happened after that, Max Freeman says. Freeman, I came back and I was grinding, but I was just there physically. Mentally, I wasn't really there. 1 month later, on September 26th, Freeman suffered a bone bruise and a sprain to his right ankle on an awkward play at first. 9 days later, he was in the batting cage on the eve of the National League Division Series against San Diego. He felt a minor pain in his rib cage but kept swinging. He took a cut and was hit with a wave of pain so bad it knocked him to his knees. He was told he had basically broken his rib. Freeman had one question. Can I play with it? Doctors told him they would do everything they could to deaden the pain. He kept the injury secret outside the clubhouse. People were asking, is he going to play or is he not going to play? Freeman says, it was all about my ankle, but no one knew about my rib. I was trying to keep that quiet because I didn't want the Padres to know. So we just tried to mask it, and we did a pretty good job. Freeman battled through the pain as L.A. beat the Padres and then the Mets to advance to the World Series, which set the stage for his heroics. Freeman normally doesn't like scouting reports or using video to prepare. But as he prepared for his crucial at-bat, he asked for an iPad and studied how New York pitcher Nestor Cortez pitched to Dodgers slugger Shohei Ohtani, who, like Freeman, is a tall lefty. He devised a strategy, looked for an inside fastball. He stepped into the batter's box, and then, Freeman says, it turned out that he threw it right where I was looking. He launched the pitch into the seats. It was the 3rd straight World Series game in which he homered, and he'd ultimately run that streak to 6 with homers in games 2, 3, and 4. Freeman didn't watch a replay of the Grand Slam until well after the series was over. After I hit it, we had a game the next day, so it's hard to take it all in, he says. But then you see all the reactions. When I saw all these people in their homes, jumping up and down, running around their houses, it really is amazing. What's so cool about sports is that it can do this to people and bring so much joy and happiness. I didn't really understand, but now to see that, it is amazing. I was able to impact people in such a positive way. As for Max, he's doing much better, and his dad expects him to look like a typical 4-year-old by the time spring training rolls around. Everything's going to be okay in 2025, hopefully, Freeman says. If not, and that's going to happen in our lifetime, you just handle the speed bumps, make sure that car makes it over and lands softly, and then you just keep going. Master of One. Shohei Ohtani hits and pitches. Travis Hunter plays wide receiver and cornerback. But let's not forget about the specialists who excel at a very specific thing. Steven Nedorishek, pommel horse, a breakout star at the 2024 Olympics. Nedorishek competed on just one apparatus, but he nailed it. His dramatic performance helped the United States team win a bronze medal, and he added another bronze in the individual competition, forever cementing his status as the pommel horse guy. Bob Uecker, knuckleball catcher. Knuckleballs flutter through the air, confusing hitters and catchers alike. When Phil Negro was with the Braves, Uecker was his personal catcher, a thankless job. When asked the best way to catch a knuckler, Uecker said, "Wait till it stops rolling and pick it up." Bubba Wells, hacker. Former Chicago Bulls star Dennis Rodman was a notoriously bad free throw shooter. So in a 1998 game, Dallas Mavericks coach Don Nelson opted to put him on the line whenever he could, using Wells to commit the fouls. The rookie fouled out in less than 3 minutes of playing time, an NBA record. Wells was able to show a hint of another skill. He made his only shot. Herb Washington, pinch runner. A track star who held the world record in the 60-yard dash, Washington was signed by the Oakland A's in 1974. He appeared in 105 games, tallying 31 stolen bases, 33 runs scored, and zero plate appearances. One of Washington's baseball cards listed his position as designated runner. And then we have Tim Krul, penalty stopper. Goalkeeper substitutions are rare, but as the 2014 World Cup, the Netherlands made a late switch in the quarterfinals, bringing on Krul just before the game went to penalty kicks. Krul promptly saved two Costa Rica attempts, sending his team to the semifinals. And now we'll end with some trivia challenge. Juan Soto, who signed with the Mets in the offseason, hit 41 home runs for the Yankees last year when he was 25. That brought his career total to 2001. Who holds the record for the most home runs before turning 26? Was it A, Barry Bonds, B, Jimmy Fox, C, Alex Rodriguez? It was Jimmy Fox. So be sure to listen next time. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. And please look at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.